Hey, welcome back, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you're all having a great week and you get some time off this week. Well, today, Paul and I are going to discuss a little bit. We'll start out by discussing the 50-year mortgage that's all the rage right now. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to, you know, kind of discuss what it means to expand your system, invest in yourself. And are you at the point, you know, if you got a choice between loan repayments or expanding your system, how do you choose? You know, so what'd you think, Paul?
Yeah, I think this was a good discussion today. And I'm, you know, we kind of went down a couple of rabbit holes, but I thought it's often a question I find myself asking myself, like, is it time to open up a new policy? And it is, but for different reasons. But what to do with your cash flow? And it's going to depend, is your cash flow coming from an investment or are you financing something that's going to drive when you expand your system?
Enjoy, everybody.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.
All right, Paul, still back in the office. You need some more decorations, man.
Yeah, I'm working on it, but the government shut. We're going to get our stuff on or about the 8th of December. So.
Oh, yeah, you're waiting on the government to ship your stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I forgot about
yeah.
that.
We have everything that we've had for the last whatever. I'm on my real desk. This is not the real
piece of furniture. This is a nice folding table.
It is. Thank God we had it. We traveled with it. I had it at the rental as well. And I get some knickknacks back there. So I'll get a piece of artwork that'll go here.
Yeah. I still think you just need to hang an AR-15 back there.
Maybe two of them.
I lost all of them in a boating accident.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, hopefully I don't get interrupted by a contractor knocking on the door, but we had a little bit of a water issue, and I think they're going to have to come back and open our ceiling tomorrow to dry it out.
So, no.
The washing machine clogged and overflowed, yep. And now it's in the ceiling in the living room. So, perfect timing. So, right when we're about to decorate for Christmas.
Yeah, sheetrock dust everywhere.
Oh, I know. Gross, man. Love it. All right. Well, hey, I know we've had maybe a couple of people wanting to get our opinions on this 50-year mortgage that's being proposed.
Yeah.
So, a 50-year mortgage, I think you and I have said on here before, like, hey, if there was a 60-year mortgage option, I'd take it.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on the 50-year mortgage and what does that mean to somebody looking for a house?
I think it, you know, for the right people that know what's going on, it's fine. So most of our clientele, people practicing IBC out the wide world, people with, you know, knowledge of the Austrian School of Economic Thought, I think all those people would be fine. I do think it opens up for most, and that's less than 1% of people in America. That's probably, you know, 1/100th of a percent. Like it's almost nobody, right? I think for the majority of the population, so the other, you know, 99.99%, it's going to contribute to their problems that they already are living with, whether it's a 30-year mortgage, 15-year mortgage, doesn't matter. The problem is lack of control over capital, lack of control over the banking function. That's what the problem people are facing is. It's not, oh, if I could just get a 60-year mortgage or a 50-year mortgage, that would lower my payment by $300 and I could afford even a bigger house.
Right.
And I think that's the problem is they look, people are looking at it just like the low interest rate environment that we saw, where everyone thinks it's the greatest thing ever. It's not.
Yeah.
It just made you poorer. And if you don't know that, then you don't know what's going on. You need to read some Austrian School of Economic Thought. Start with maybe Henry Hazlitt and, you know, and graduate to Mises and some other folks. But that is the issue. It's not extending your amortization schedule isn't going to help most people, I don't think.
Yeah. And we ran the quick numbers. I just did two different examples. And the difference in the monthly mortgage amount was roughly 15%. So the same house at a 50-year mortgage versus a 30-year mortgage, you're going to save, not save, that's maybe a bad word, but your monthly payment's going to be about 15% less with a 50-year mortgage. And I know whether, you know, why that's being proposed, because it lowers the payment, trying to allow more people into a house, because what's the stats, like the first, you know, Gen Z or, you know, aren't going to buy a house until they're 40.
Right.
They won't be able to afford a home until they're 40 years old. So this is a way to do that. I think it's going to have the reverse effect, just like you said, where people aren't going to say that $400,000 budget they had in mind for a house, they're not going to stick with that. Now they're going to say, well, our monthly payment will drop by 15%, so we can actually afford more of a house. So we're going to go 450,
yeah.
You know, which is completely defeats the purpose of what this is trying to do for somebody. But that's just human nature. That's what's going to happen. But as far as, you know, people say, oh my gosh, the interest you're going to pay on a 50 versus a 30. Well, yeah, you're going to pay more interest if you lived in the house for 50 years. Nobody lives in a house for 50 years. Like, what's the longest you've ever lived in a house? The longest I've ever lived in a house is probably, I probably lived in a house for 7 years. That was it.
As an adult.
As an adult. Yeah. As a child. Yeah. I mean, that's a different generation, right? There wasn't mobility in the workforce. You couldn't pick up and move your computer to a different state and keep the exact same job. That didn't exist back when we were kids, when our parents were buying houses. Now, nobody stays in a house for, you know, at 5 to 7 years. That's it. And then you go refinance, you start a brand new one all the way from the very beginning.
Yep.
No matter what you do, 50 year or 30 year, like the amortization schedule, you're paying nothing but interest anyway for the first 5 to 7 years. I mean, hardly any principal.
Hardly any. And then when you roll in the closing costs, I mean, it's you know, 90% interest in the first five years. So I find it all mildly interesting, right? I don't care. In a few years, I really won't need the banks unless I want to use them for whatever I need to use them for. And that's and that's great. And our clients will experience that as time goes on as well. But I think it's just contributing to the problem. You know, central banking is the problem. Until you get rid of, and that's how I start. Every time I hear, I can't watch any economic news at all, because every time I hear the word, they're talking about inflation. They're actually talking about prices. They're not talking about the supply of money. They're not talking about how the Federal Reserve just gave, you know, printed $6 trillion, and they just don't understand what's going on. And this is just a perfect example of it. So I told my brother-in-law we'd talk about it a little bit, and, you know, someday over a couple of beers, I'll talk to him about it as well and just get my thoughts of, you know, this is the way things work. The Federal Reserve is what's killing you. Central bank, fiat currency, government spending, that's what's making people poorer. And then when you look at the strength of the dollar relative to how much government debt there is, I mean, they're really linked. Think about it. Like, there's what, $40 trillion of national debt almost? And the dollar's
worth. The estimate is, you know, I don't know how many years from now, it's going to be up at $50 trillion, which just means your dollar's going to be less valuable at that time. But this is only going to become worse next year if the Fed chair is replaced with somebody who's pro-Trump and they actually drop interest rates to like 1% again. Like, that's now good luck finding a house, because everybody's going to want a house, which means the market's going to explode again and it's going to become even more unaffordable.
Yeah. And economics is an individual, like it might help you that interest rates are, you know, at 1% for a 30-year note.
I'll refinance. Sure.
Sure. But it's going to hurt somebody else, right, who is trying to buy.
Exactly.
So anyway, folks,
go back to your original point. You're undercapitalized.
You're undercapitalized.
This is what you're concerned about. If you're really weighing, ooh, now with a 50-year mortgage, I might be able to afford a house, you're grossly undercapitalized.
Yep. You got to really think about what you're doing. And again, I'm not really speaking to our clients at all and people that listen to this podcast. I'm speaking to the other 99.9%. You don't know what's going on, and therefore you don't know what to do. But I will say again, I would sign up. If I could lower my payment by $1,000 a month. Well, that's $1,000 a month of free cash flow now that I can pay new premium with.
Yeah, you're going to put it into something smart. You're not going to use that $1,000 a month now to increase
life.
Now you're going out five times more per month on a really nice dinner, right?
Right.
That'd be stupid. Use that money wisely and build another asset for yourself. Expand your system.
Right. And I think generally speaking, that's the wealthy mindset. I'm going to acquire another asset with that free cash flow.
Yeah. And that's why the wealthy, when they look at this, they say, sure, I'll do a 50-year mortgage. That means it cash flows more.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
And, you know, and I've talked about it before, and I've heard other people that that we're friends with in the IBC space. I don't plan on paying this house off. What good does it really do me other than the peace of mind of, oh, I don't have a mortgage payment? So just remind everyone, I'm going to maintain the ability to pay off the mortgage without actually ever paying it off.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep refinancing it, using the banks to my advantage, pulling the equity out so I can use that equity to go do something. Again, it's going to be premium first, always. And I'm going to do that until the day I die. That's the plan. I'm going to keep refinancing and pulling out cash over and over and over and over as many times as it makes sense.
Yep, because you can get a more productive use of that capital somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, I've got
in your house
probably 30% of the equity in this house is locked up.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of expanding your system, you know, one of the questions I've gotten, I had a discussion with somebody last week, actually, and he was talking about, you know, I've got a loan out. I'm not sure if I'm ready to expand my system with another policy because I think I should just focus on repaying this loan and then think about expanding the system. So it got me thinking, and, you know, there may not be one right way to go about this thought process, but I think it's something to consider. If you've got an outstanding loan, should you pay it off with your cash flow or should you use your cash flow to expand your system instead? So, I mean, there's typically two things most people practicing the infinite banking concept spend that their cash value loans on. Either like an investment opportunity,
yep,
or to finance a big purchase, like buy a new car.
Sure.
So there's two different schools of thought then in repaying your loan. You need to have a loan repayment plan, no matter what. So how would you, if it's for an investment, what would you see as a possible loan repayment plan on that?
Yeah, you could simply use the cash flow from, let's say it was a note investment, or maybe you bought a rental property and it's providing you some cash flow. You would use the cash flow from that investment to repay the policy loan. Very basic, very simple. And if you're doing those things, that's what you should do, right? And again, to get our mind right here, a loan repayment is literally a bulldozer right there.
Don't get distracted.
Yeah. I love watching it. But a loan repayment is like putting money that you took out of a savings account back into a savings account. You could look at it like that. Right? Because, yeah, a couple weeks later, you could pull that money right back out that you repaid. So, but yeah, anyway, that's what I do. I take cash flow from different investments that I have and I repay policy loans with it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when it comes to an opportunity or funding an investment with a cash value loan, my first question is, well, how am I getting my capital back? Which goes to just analyzing the risk. And if I've got a sure way to get my capital back from this opportunity, then that I've got a loan repayment plan built right in. It's either, you know, it's providing cash flow right now, and then I get the principal amount returned at the end of the term. Maybe it's a 5-year term, something like that. Or maybe it's distributed, amortized over 60 payments, and all of it goes towards paying it back. Or maybe it's just a big balloon payment with a profit at the end. And then I need to be able to service at least the interest on that loan in the meantime, until I get all my money back and I can repay that loan.
Yeah, real quick admin note. Can you hear any of that?
No.
Okay.
You're good.
Noise canceling is working.
Yeah.
It's pretty loud. they're doing my landscaping, so.
Nice.
So yeah, that's exactly right. And I would encourage people to direct all excess cash flows against servicing that policy loan, including, maybe this is too early to say this, but including your the money you're saving for next year's premium. If you're a if you're paying other than monthly, you know, you're saving that premium somewhere, those dollars should also go back to servicing that loan. Because why not?
Why wouldn't they? And I still talk to clients who I think it's just an emotional thing. Like it's a feel good thing. I've got this money sitting in somebody else with Chase, US Bank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, sitting in that account that I'm saving up to make this next premium payment next year. But meanwhile, I've got an outstanding loan. Well, save yourself some interest and just repay that loan quicker.
Correct.
Because
you've just enhanced your rate of return.
You've enhanced your rate of return. You're paying less interest. And when your policy anniversary comes due, if you need to, you just take a loan to pay that policy premium and bam, you're right where you would have been it otherwise, except all that time in between, you weren't paying interest on those dollars because you stored them back in your policy instead of in somebody else's bank.
Yeah. And you gave the life insurance company that you partly own more capital to work with because maybe I need a loan or maybe Dave needs a loan or they're going to, you know, they've got some bond investment they're going to go do or some commercial real estate endeavor.
I think we forget about that, man. I think we forget that we own the company. A lot of people forget, hey, if you could let your money sit with a company that doesn't care about you and gives you nothing in return for it, or a company that you're part owner of, who should you let it sit with? It only like why would you not?
Yeah, you get invited to the annual. Yeah, you get invited to the annual meeting every year. In fact, I had a client, a friend of mine, she reached out. And she's like, "Have you ever sat in on one of these annual meetings?" And I was like, "No, I never have." But you know. By all means, go listen in.
You do get invited. I usually just let, you know, John be the proxy for me.
That's right.
So the other thing you would use, so that's with an investment or an opportunity. There should be a built-in loan repayment feature in that opportunity, or else it's probably a little too risky. Now, that's the way I would look at it. If I'm not sure I'll be able to repay my loan once this opportunity pays out or is complete, then it's probably too risky and I don't want to go. I'll wait for something better. The other one is finance a purchase like a car. So if you're going to go buy a car and typically do bank financing, you can do the numbers yourself. It's real easy. What would a bank charge me on a monthly payment? $500.
Yeah. Well, they'll tell you too.
Yeah.
They'll ask you, what do you want your payment to be?
What do you want your payment to be? Yeah, just like that sliding bar on those commercials. Oh, a smaller down payment, a bigger monthly payment. I'll make the down payment bigger and a lower monthly payment. That's the amount you should be paying back towards your loan, at least.
At least, right.
Yeah, but that's your loan repayment plan. If you can't afford it, then you can't afford that car, I'm sorry to say.
Right. If you wouldn't take a third party loan, I guess they're all third party loans, but if you wouldn't take a loan from a bank or a finance company at the car dealership, then you shouldn't take a policy loan generally.
To buy something.
To buy something.
Because you got to be able to pay it back.
Right.
I mean, again, it's not a requirement that you repay your loan on any certain time interval because it's guaranteed by the death benefit. The death benefit is guaranteeing your loan. So if you never pay it back, you die, the death benefit, the company recaptures that outstanding loan from the death benefit before it goes to your family. But if you want to play honest banker, don't steal the peas, and you're really playing banker and taking over the banking function in your life, you need to repay loans. Simple as that.
Yep. You would never, I mean, you know, I'm not going to borrow from the company that I part own and never pay them back. That doesn't seem that. It's just not good. So help make your company profitable by repaying your policy loans. Very simple.
Yeah. So then the question comes up, well, I've got a policy loan I'm repaying. I could pay it back much quicker and put all of my cash flow towards it. Or I could just maintain a normal repayment schedule, whatever I determine that is from either the investment or, you know, like the car example, like we just said, $500 a month. And then the extra cash flow, I could use that to expand my system.
Yeah.
What should I do? And it all depends. But my thought is if you don't, At some point, you have to prioritize expanding your system, and that's going to take seed capital. Like, you got to do it if you want to expand your system. Otherwise, you're going to just be taking loans. You'll pay them back as quick as possible, and then you'll find some other reason to take a loan, right? And then you're just paying the loans back, and you're prioritizing that and never prioritizing expanding your system. So there's a lot of people who probably have policies for 5 years, haven't added another one yet. Why is that?
Lack of understanding. Generally, you know, everyone that I'm thinking of, it's just, you know, I think about some of my clients, and I know they're all making more money now.
Right. And most people are. From 5 years ago to now, they're probably making more money than when they started their policy.
And I know they don't have policies on their children. I know they're not listening to me right now. I wish they did. No, they're not listening.
Yeah.
They should be, though. Anyway, all right. So the only way to add to your capital base, as a review here, folks, is very simple, is through premium. You can't, right. Sure, repaying loans frees up capital you've already established, right? But it doesn't add new capital that you can use.
Good point. It does not add to your capital base, just repaying the loans.
Correct.
The only thing it does is more premium.
More premium, right? So, and I've said this before to people, your first policy was $30,000 a year. Great. Who cares if your second policy is only five?
Yeah.
Who cares? You can have many different policies of many different sizes. It just depends on your current cash flow situation. If $5,000, if, you know, is all you can afford, great. Who cares?
Yeah.
Expand your system.
I like the motto, always be buying. Yeah, you hear that with cryptocurrency purchasers or Bitcoiners, and it's...
I moved mine today, by the way, successfully.
All right, good. But the motto is always be buying. Like, I have the same motto with life insurance, always be buying. You know, if I'm not buying and adding to my capital base, I think that's really well put, man. You're adding to your capital base so that 5 years from now, I've got way more capital available.
Yes.
That's working and growing and compounding uninterrupted for me than I otherwise would just by repaying my loans.
Right. And let me tie this in for people, maybe you're a new listener, but oftentimes early in the process, we talk to people that might have student loans or they have car loans or they have some sort of debt that they're servicing, right? And of course, I'm actually thinking about another person that I talked to that is not my client and decided not to become one anyway, but they are throwing like thousands of dollars a month extra against this amortized loan that they had. And I said, hey, is that making you wealthier? Well, they're like, well, I'm saving a little bit of interest. I'm like, yes, but you're not earning any interest. Would you rather earn interest and service that debt and pay it off eventually all at the same time while building this asset? Like, I don't know. Anyway, it's no different. You should prioritize your capital, right? If you have extra capital, prioritize your capital accumulation and start a new policy.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same mindset.
Yep. Even if it means you're repaying your loan that you have outstanding right now a little slower.
Who cares?
It is what it is. You're still repaying it. There's no timeline on repaying that loan. But again, your capital base will not increase without seed capital through the form of premium.
That's right.
Premium. Yeah. So something I do, once you have enough policies or a system of policies, I track them all on a spreadsheet. And I'm not like a super detailed spreadsheet guy. But because I have 15 policies, I like to know which one's coming up next. So I can sort by anniversary date or whatever. And I know exactly what the next premium coming up is. And then I keep track of how much PUA I have in all of those policies to continue to fill up before the next anniversary date. So when I've got money in the checking account and say I got to pay a contractor to fix the leak in my roof that they're going to open up and completely destroy my living room, before I cut a $15,000 check to a contractor for something like that straight out of my bank account because I've got it there, I'm first going on my spreadsheet or going into my policy portal and looking at where do I have PUA? I can still pay on any of my policies. And I'll pick the one with the closest, the nearest premium or anniversary date.
Okay.
So if I got one that's coming due in March and another one next June, I'm going to fill up the one in March. I'm going to max that one out with PUA. So I'll take that $15,000, apply it towards my PUA, and then I'll take a loan against one of my policies to cut that $15,000 check. Because I want to make sure that $15,000 that I brought in from hard work, you know, my labor, and it's in my checking account, that gets paid somewhere as permanent premium that's going to be compounding uninterrupted for the rest of my life before I use it to pay a contractor and never see that money again.
Yeah, so really it's an opportunity, even though you have this looming large expense. Do you need a new washer as well?
You know, every appliance in this house is junk, I swear. It's all, what's the brand? I mean, it's all like Samsung. It's like they're high-end appliances, yeah. And I've had an issue with every, from the microwave to the stove to the refrigerator to the washing and dryer, all of them have had an issue, and we've only been in this house for 2.5 years. Yep.
They make the best TVs, I think. We had Samsung in our Kentucky house, and terrible luck. I had to replace the fridge 4 years in.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff is garbage. It's expensive, and it looks really nice, but it don't work. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't have to replace the washing machine.
Okay, that's good. Because you have there's a lot of hair in that household. Like,
there's a ton of hair, man. A
bunch of girls with thick hair, long hair. Your hair's fine, but also thick and getting longer.
Getting longer and maybe looser. Who knows? Maybe I lose more every day. I don't know.
but anyway, so, but long story short, this is an opportunity to use your imagination to think and to sequence capital through your system of policies before it goes and does that thing. So a lot of times we see people like, oh, I got to buy this house, or I'm going to buy another rental property. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, so what? What's your point? I was like, did you know that we could take that $150,000 that you have saved? You wanted to pay $25,000 a year premium. You need 100. We can design a policy that will accept all of that money you have, and you can still go use it for the down payment on that rental property.
Yeah. So,
and that's what you should do.
And that's very common. People have all this cash saved up and they have a purpose for it. And that's not a reason to delay infinite banking and starting your journey or expanding your system. That's the perfect reason to expand your system or start your first policy.
Exactly right. It's an opportunity.
And it's an opportunity.
Multiple prospective clients throughout the years that they just couldn't see it. And the reason is they just don't know because they're not doing it yet.
Yeah.
But I, you know, often would show them exactly how I would do their transaction. This is what I would do. Taking their actual numbers, and this is what I would do.
Yeah. And we've got plenty of clients who, you know, I've talked to before they became clients, and they're like, man, I wish I would have learned about this like 6 months ago. Cause 6 months ago, I just renovated our house. And we spent $150,000 in cash renovating our house.
That's all on the walls now.
And that's cash that'll never earn for you again until, yeah, you sell your home, and hopefully that added more than $150,000 of value to your home and you get it all back.
Right.
But you could have done this first.
Yeah, because none of these people are going to refinance.
Yeah, unless rates drop to 1%.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
There's houses in my neighborhood here that have almost tripled in value since 2019.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure of it. Yep. It's outrageous, and it's going to get even worse as they drop rates to a manipulated level.
Yeah, and chime in the comments if you really think low interest rates are great. And you see it all the time. Even I have friends of mine commenting about it, and it's selfishly we would like them to drop so we could refinance, but it just makes you poor. And if you don't understand why, just it's very obvious. the house values didn't go crazy in 2020 by magic. It wasn't because of COVID. None of that is true.
Yeah.
It is because interest rates bottomed out,
creating more competition in the marketplace.
And these rates drive human behavior.
That's right. It's all. Oh my God!
Keep your head about you, and don't be manipulated.
Yeah,
it's like an algorithm.
It's not having to care.
Yeah, it's like an algorithm on Instagram or Facebook. You start scrolling, and it just sucks you in, man. And now you're doomed scrolling, and you know, a half hour has gone by, and you have no idea. You can't recall a single thing you just looked at.
Right.
Because that algorithm got you. And that's the same thing with the interest rate and financial mainstream. It's an algorithm that sucks you in and blinds you to what's really going on.
Yep.
That's it. All right. Cool. Well, if you guys want to expand on this, go back to episode 192 just a few weeks ago, titled "Why Do You Only Have One Policy?" So if you want to get serious about expanding your system and you've had one policy, you've been stuck at one for years, it's time to start growing. And there's ways to do it. Hopefully this discussion opened your eyes and made you think a few things to determine, hey, at some point I've got to invest in myself and expand my system for my future. So, 'cause you know, 5 years later, I've never talked to anybody who's had a policy for 5 years and they're like, I really don't like this thing anymore. They're like, no, this thing's amazing right now. Like 5 years in, it's just getting fun. But that's got to start somewhere.
I wish somebody that owns a policy that is with a company that I don't currently write business for would come to me with a policy that's that old and sell it to me.
Been there.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would buy it.
It's a great thing. It's unfortunate that somebody can't make their premium payment because whoever they worked with in the beginning just set them up for failure to begin with, which is unfortunately what a lot of the insurance industry does. But kind of like last week's episode and Kyle Busch, you know, he was set up for failure from the get-go.
Oh my goodness. At a very high level of money too.
Ooh. Yeah. I thought I've lost money in my day. That's a chunk.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, hey, hope you enjoyed. Have a great week and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
And yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, I love Thanksgiving.
It's such a good week. Yeah. So much food.
Fall asleep on the couch watching football.
Yeah, yeah. And the Chiefs are playing this year on Thanksgiving. So I'll have a game to watch that I care about.
Yeah, right.
Somewhat.
Yeah. Somewhat.
At least enough to pay attention to it.
Enough to watch.
Yeah, enough to watch. So, all right, cool. We'll catch you guys next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle in a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.